And a very good morning to you, John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group, back with you for another program of The Law and You this Tuesday morning. As always, it's your opportunity to get free legal advice here. All you need to do is give us a call. 55208888 is the number. That's 55208888. South of the Tweed River, don't forget you need to put 07 in front of the number, or you can use our email address, talkback@4crb.com. If you're not in a position to get to the phone but have a question, you can just send it through to us as an email, and we'll certainly deal with that next week. But at the moment, the lines are open. They're all available, so you could be our very first caller for this morning, 55208888. And thank you to the people who called in last week. Certainly an interesting program on diverse subjects, and that's always interesting for our listening audience. So thank you for that. While we're waiting for some calls to come in, you may remember that I was talking last week about binding financial agreements that are entered into between couples who intend to enter into a de facto relationship, or who are intending to get married. And not uncommonly, where there's a disproportionate measure of assets held by each of them, or alternatively, where there's a second marriage or perhaps a third marriage involved, and there are children from earlier relationships that need to be considered. So just to bear in mind that it's not just a family law issue dealing with a binding financial agreement. They are actually a very effective tool to be using as part of your estate planning as well. But enough of that. We have our first caller on the line. Very quick out of the blocks this morning. Good morning, Pam. How are you?
Good morning, John. I was just wondering, what's the rules with putting up new fences? Mine needs replacing, and what's the advice you give?
Sorry, Pam, can you just go back to the start? I was just having a little bit of static on the line, so I couldn't quite hear your question, but if you could ask it again, I'd appreciate it.
Okay. I want to put up a new back fence, and I'm just wondering, what are the rules concerning putting up a fence? So I've never had anything to do with it.
Right, okay. So is there a back fence there at the moment?
Yes.
And what condition is it in?
Very fragile.
All right.
Yeah.
Right.
And like it wobbles when a jump dog across the back jumps up on it, and yeah, it's a bit scary. So I think, yeah, and they're called friendly fences, which... silly fences. I'm just wondering, I'm thinking of still a wooden one, but, you know, just a basic normal fence.
Yes, well, yeah. I think they refer to them as good neighbour fences from memory. The first thing that you should do in relation to the fence is to speak to the neighbour over the back fence to ask them whether they're happy to agree that the fence be replaced. So it would be question.
If they're not, John, sorry, if they're not, I would have to do it myself, you know, if they're not agreeable.
If they're not agreeable, then what you would need to do, if there's already a fence there, you would need to get a quote from a fencing contractor to either say, which says that the fence can be repaired and this would be the cost of repairing it, or alternatively that the fence is irreparable and that this would be the cost of replacing it. And you would then,
irreparable.
Yeah, so then you would need to, if you can't reach agreement over those quotes with the neighbour, you would then need to serve them with a notice to fence or a notice to repair the fence under the Neighbourhood Dispute Resolution Act, which has a section in it which deals with fencing disputes. And then from there, if you can't reach agreement after you've served the notice, what you have to do is file an application to your, I assume you're in Queensland, are you?
Yes.
Yep. So you need to file an application with QCAT, which is the Queensland Civil and Administrative Tribunal, and they will normally order a mediation hearing between you and the neighbour to try and come to a resolution. And if you can't come to a resolution, then ultimately QCAT will arrange a hearing and make an order as to what will happen. Now, with QCAT, There are no lawyers allowed, and also there's no costs awarded. So apart from paying the application fee, the process, although time-consuming, is relatively inexpensive.
Okay. And so should I need to get any things? Do I go to the courthouse to get any of these forms?
What I would suggest, do you have access to the internet?
Sort of, I possibly can.
All right. Well, if you're not sort of feeling confident in looking it up online, I'm just thinking that if you did have access to the internet, you can look it up online and you can actually print out the government, the Queensland government have quite useful information sheets that deal with the process in relation to fencing disputes.
Oh, okay.
So you can print those out, and you can also print out the notice to fence or notice to repair offence, and you can also print out the QCAT application. But if you're not in a position to do that, then probably the only alternative would be to go to the courthouse. Which part of the Gold Coast do you live, Southport or Coolangatta End?
No, up top end.
Okay, well, if you're up the top end, you could go into the courthouse in Southport.
Okay, and thank you very much, John.
They would be able to assist you with that. So all the best. But as I say, the starting point is always to endeavour to have a discussion with the neighbour and try and resolve it amicably, if that's possible.
That's okay, too. But thank you very much for
that. Then. No trouble at all. And the time on 4CRB has just passed 13 minutes past 9. The Law and You is the program. The phone number is 55208888. That number again, 55208888. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
It's that time of the day where we at 4CRB like to enjoy a delicious cuppa. And our brew of choice is Madura Tea, Australian owned since 1978. Discover the award-winning taste of Madura Tea. A 4CRB sponsor.
And you're listening to The Law and You on 4CRB. Our telephone number, 55208888. That number again, 55208888. Please don't leave your calls to the last 5 or 10 minutes of the program, where often we get a bank up of calls and sometimes can't take them on air. We much prefer to speak to you on air so that we can not only help you, but we can also help other people who might be listening but are unable to get to the phone. And with that, we say a very good morning to Jean. G'day, Jean. How are you today?
Good morning, John.
How can I help?
I don't know if you can help me. This is sort of a New South Wales inquiry, and I know the law's different. My daughter was renting an old fibro house. Apparently, it was sublet. It was quite a large area, and somebody has a workshop business on one side, and he sublet the house to them. Where there was a fire about 4 weeks ago through a electrical fault in the roof, according to the fireys.
Right.
They had no trip switch on their electrical box and not a working fire alarm. Luckily, my granddaughter came out of her bedroom, smelled smoke, and they were all safe, but they lost everything. And she wondered whether they can, because there were no safety features in the house, whether they would be able to make a claim of some description.
Oh, dear. Look, that's going to be a very difficult one. Did she actually have a formal subletting agreement with the person she was renting from?
No, there was no lease.
All right. Because she would probably need to take action against the person she was subletting from.
Not the actual landlord,
Yeah, and then they in turn would take action against the landlord. I assume that the fellow who was running the workshop there, he suffered similar damage, did he? It sounds like
no,
it was a fellow.
No, they didn't. No, they were far enough away. They didn't suffer any damage.
Oh,
whatsoever.
Okay. So it's only your daughter who's had this problem.
Yes, and they had no contents insurance, as they don't always. And lost everything.
Yes, okay. So, look, I think it's going to be a difficult situation for her. Whereabouts in New South Wales is she?
Near Blacktown area.
Oh, okay, so that's Western Sydney, isn't it?
Western Sydney, yes.
What I would suggest she does is get online and see if she can find reference to a free community legal service that operates in that area. and make an appointment and go in and see them to talk to them about what action she might possibly be able to take. So she could do that, or alternatively, she could get on to the appropriate government department down there that deals with rental matters. It would probably, I don't know whether it would be, but it may be Consumer Affairs New South Wales. I can give you a phone number for them if you want it.
Yes, please.
Okay, so the number for Consumer Affairs New South Wales is 133220.
133220.
Yes, and if they're not the department that deal with it, they would certainly be able to provide the contact details for whoever it is that you need to get in touch with so that she can pursue the matter.
Thank you very much, John.
Yeah, it's
John.
A very, very sad situation, isn't it? I feel a great deal of sympathy for your daughter because I know exactly what young people are like. You know, they're flat out paying the rent, let alone paying contents insurance, so it is a very sad situation for her.
Well, actually, yes, you know, it is. And, you know, she's got animals and she worries about them. But anyway,
yes.
Thank you so much for your help.
Okay,
I really
then.
Appreciate it.
All the very best. And the time on 4CRB is just coming up to 18 minutes past nine as we say good morning to Ray. G'day, Ray. How are you?
Good, thanks, John. John, is there anything that can override a will? Like, if I make a will, is that final?
Look, Ray, it is possible to bring what's called a family provision application. So that someone who believes that they should have received a benefit under your will and didn't can bring an application. And the other grounds on which a will can be overridden is if there is evidence that suggests that the will was made under duress, or alternatively that the person lacked capacity at the time they made the will. Now, the people who can bring an application for provision, it's quite a limited class. So the only persons who can bring an application are the spouse of the deceased, a child of the deceased, or someone who was who was financially dependent upon the deceased at the time the deceased passed away and for whom the deceased should reasonably have made provision. So it's a fairly limited class.
You answered the question perfectly, John. Mm.
All right, then.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Ray, all the very best. And we say now a very good morning to Dave. G'day, Dave. How are you today?
Yes, okay. Very good. Yourself?
Yeah, I can't complain. A little bit of a croaky voice, but apart from that, 100%.
Good. Are you there, John?
Yes, I am. How can I help you, Dave?
Do you do property settlement?
What sort of property settlement do you mean? Do you mean the sale of property, or are you talking about a property settlement in a family law matter?
Yes, family law matter.
Family law.
In other words, we have, unfortunately, property which we're 80% share in, and our daughter and son-in-law had 20%.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, her daughter passed.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, well, you know, now he's claiming he wants his 20%. So I'm just wondering, they never ever put any money into the property.
Right.
You know, we've put up all the money, and then, of course, there's a loan outstanding. So I just wondered, how does the 20% of his work?
It sounds to me, Dave, that the property that you purchased, where is it? Is it in Queensland or New South Wales?
No, Queensland.
Queensland. Yeah. Okay, so it sounds to me like you purchased as tenants in common with you and your spouse owning 80% of the property and your daughter and son-in-law owning 20%. And presumably your 80% held by you and your wife was held as joint tenants as to that 80%. And it sounds to me like more than likely your son-in-law and daughter's 20% was held as joint tenants as well, which means that on her passing, if that is the case, if it was joint tenants, on her passing, her share in that property automatically devolves to your son-in-law, regardless of any provision that your daughter may have had in her will.
Yeah.
So he is now the legal owner of the 20%. Now, the next question is, you mentioned that they didn't put any money in and that there was a loan. Was that loan documented?
Oh, absolutely. They were supposed to be paying the loan off when we put up the majority of the money, and unfortunately, when she passed, or before she passed, I must iterate that he left her 8 months prior to her passing.
Right.
He stopped paying the loan off 8 months prior, so she was left with all the payments and whatever else on the loan.
Who was the loan to? Was it a loan to you, or was it a loan to a financial institution?
No, to a financial institution.
Oh, okay, so it wasn't a case where you put the money in and...
We had to actually sign guarantor or get on the loan as
okay,
well.
Okay, did you put any money in at all?
Yes. I put in 800,000
here. Right, okay. Right, well, look, Dave, you certainly do need to get some legal advice in relation to the matter. There's no question about that. It's going to be a matter of looking at the whole circumstances of the transaction, what you put in. There's absolutely no question that you're entitled to 80% of the proceeds. The question will be around the circumstances of your daughter and the son-in-law in terms of what he may or may not be entitled to out of that share. Did your daughter make a will? Did she have a will?
No.
Okay, so therefore they were only separated, not divorced?
That's correct.
Okay, so that means that under the rules of intestacy, there were no children? Were there children?
Oh, yes, yeah. There's grandchildren.
Okay, all right. So
unfortunately, we haven't been allowed to see them.
Yeah, so the grandchildren are going to be entitled to part of the benefit of her estate on intestacy. So you definitely do need to get some legal advice, Dave. It's a fairly complicated matter. What I would suggest you do would be to... whereabouts on the Gold Coast do you live?
Around Southport area.
Okay, up in the Southport area. All right, so what I would suggest you could do is ring the Queensland Law Society... And they would be able to give you a recommendation for a lawyer who's reasonably close to where you are, who is able to assist you with that sort of matter. That's probably the best idea.
Yeah, okay. I think he's insisting on we sell the property.
Yes, well, he can force the sale.
Yeah, there's still family living in the property. I don't know if that makes any difference.
Who's the family living in the property?
Well, it'll be two grandchildren, the eldest and the youngest. And,
Okay. And when you say they're living there, are they living there with the son-in-law or is he living elsewhere?
No,
he's living elsewhere. So yes, are the children old enough to? Are the grandchildren old enough to look after themselves? Are they?
One of them is. The other one is living with her mother, with her mum. Unfortunately, her father passed away as well, and two of them have moved in there.
Right.
Unfortunately, with this rental crisis here, that's what's happened.
Mm. All right, look, I'll just give you the number for the Law Society. Dave, have you got a pen there handy?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so the number is 1-300-367-757. So if you give the Law Society a call and just tell them, you can tell them whereabouts you live and you can just ask them for a recommendation to a lawyer within reasonable proximity of where you are so that you don't have, hours of travelling time. Someone who's competent in that field and who would be able to provide you with advice in relation to detailed advice and act for you in the process to ensure that the matter's dealt with fairly from your perspective. All right, then.
Okay, thanks, John. Appreciate it.
Okay, Dave, all the very best. And the time on 4CRB is just coming up to 25 minutes past 9. The Law and You is the program. The phone number is 5520888 if you have a question or a query. We've probably got time for maybe one more call. So if you're sitting out there on the about to pick up the phone, do so right now. The lines are all clear, so you'll get straight through. 5520888. So I was talking earlier about what I was saying last week about binding financial agreements and their use in estate planning. One other thing that's come into high relief for me in the last few days is the issue of discretionary trusts. And many people who are in business would be familiar with discretionary trusts and have used discretionary trusts as part of their tax planning over the years, and also for asset protection purposes, so that they, if you're in a high risk business, by holding assets in a trust, you can effectively protect those assets from claims in the event of a failure of your business, or if you get sued for some reason, for example, for negligence or something of that nature. Now, the only thing that's real, and the thing that really brought it into high relief for me in the last couple of days was an email I've received from someone asking me to set up a family trust, and it provided that the appointors or principals of the trust were to be a husband and wife. The trustees of the trust were to be a husband and wife. The beneficiaries of the trust was to include the husband and wife. Now, the problem with that, of course, is that, and it's well settled law, that where all the elements of control in relation to a trust reside in one person, or in this case in a couple, then the court does have the ability to go behind the trust and say, no, this trust is really just the alter ego of these people, and therefore the trust or the court will allow the assets that are held in the trust and thought to be protected to in fact be regarded as the assets of the people who set the trust up. So it does just underscore the importance of getting proper legal advice before you proceed to set up a discretionary trust, because someone may go through their whole business life with a trust that's like that was one of these ones that you buy online and set up, and they've just put in themselves as the trustees, themselves as the principals or the appointors, and themselves as the beneficiaries. And the trust may operate perfectly well from an accounting perspective and from a tax perspective, but if there is a claim against one of the individuals in that trust, then you very well could find that the whole trust, which you thought was perfect for protecting assets, is in fact absolutely useless, and those assets are available to be attacked. So it's that old story that if you want the services of a monkey, be prepared to pay peanuts, and that's what happens. People look up and see that you can order these things online, and they seem to be relatively cheap by comparison to what you would pay a lawyer to set the trust up. But in the end, if there's a problem, then it's going to be a serious problem. There's no question about that. So just a little bit of advice there for people if they're looking to, if you presently operate under a discretionary trust, operate a business or hold assets in a discretionary trust, to get that trust reviewed to make sure that it's going to afford the protection that that you think that it's going to give you. Well, that's probably all the time we have today for questions, so thank you so much to those people who've called in. Certainly an interesting program, a few interesting issues raised there, which I hope have been a benefit to those of you listening out there as well. I'm John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group. I'll be back with you again next week for another program of The Law and You. But as always, until then, it's goodbye and God bless.